Hey, it's Jeremy White
and Joe DiBiase,
and we host Jeremy and Joe, your daily destination for Buffalo sports talk.
All Bills, all Sabres, all the time.
Did you know that Jeremy and Joe is both a radio show and a podcast? You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search for Jeremy and Joe, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Good morning. Happy Wednesday.
Don't gloss over that. You messed up.
No,
right away.
I was going to say, I'm like, we'll get into it. 30 seconds before the show begins, I spill my energy drink all over the desk.
Good job.
I still have some of the energy drink left, though. We're still good.
You did not spill a lot of it.
I did not spill a lot of it. I spilled a good bit of it, though.
You spilled more than I thought, less than you feared.
It's a bad start to the day when that happens.
I mean, there could be worse. You could have no energy drink left.
I think maybe the worst start to the day for everybody, and Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. I think the worst start of the day, having to do with spilling a drink, you leave the coffee mug, cup, whatever.
On the top of the car?
On the top of the car. Have you ever done that?
No, because I don't drink coffee. I am a psychopath. You cannot trust me.
I have. I've done it. Only once. I've done it once.
Oof, worst spill. Yeah, I can't go into details about that because it happened here.
Oh, it happened. Oh, okay. I know the story. Yeah, no, you can't.
Yeah, I can't be telling that one on there.
I've had the coffee, you know, cup, mug, container, whatever you want to call it, whatever your prerogative is. I've had that fall off a car one time, relatively recently. Me and my girlfriend were getting ready to go on a road trip. We left early in the morning. She gave me her coffee mug. She's like, hold that while we're putting stuff in the car. Put it on top of the car. Neither of us remembered it because it was about a 5-minute process of getting things into the car. Neither of us remember it. I hit reverse. We're going. The thing totally falls off the back. No damage on the car. But boy, what a start to a road trip. It could be worse, but.
So I have a toxic trait to myself that is probably like the bad start to the morning kind of thing. Anytime that I pack myself a lunch, I forget it.
Oh,
I will,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I will have the food set aside, everything like that.
Do you make it the night before or the day of?
The night before, typically,
yeah.
But sometimes it's even the day of.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I'm driving away, about 5 minutes in, I go.
Yep.
And it just like, if it was a movie, it would cut to where the food is in the fridge.
And you never realize it at a point where it's a very easy, all right, screw it, got to turn around. All right, this is a little annoying.
Yeah, it's not 30 seconds in.
It's when you're on the thruway and you're like, we're here.
I'm about to get on the thruway and then there it is. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going back. I'm not going back for this.
We've crossed the Rubicon. We're too far. We just got to go.
Honestly, once I get onto a major road before the thruway,
mm-hmm.
Like, once I get out of my own neighborhood, it's already too far.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I live close to the thruway, so really leaving my neighborhood
is the thruway.
Is the thruway, and it does immediately become apparent.
But
you've
that
gone
is
too far.
Yeah, for me, if it's already 2 minutes out of my way, we're gone forever.
Yeah, it's tough. It's a tough start to the morning. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Bills get back to work later this afternoon. We'll talk with Sal Capaccio a little bit after 11. Sabres are in action tonight at home against Pittsburgh. 6 p.m. pregame, 7 p.m. puck drop. Only two more preseason games before they get the season underway. Now, just over a week away. It's next Thursday.
Next Thursday.
At home, right? Against the Rangers?
At home against the Rangers.
Should be exciting.
You're
going.
Yeah.
You're going.
I have mixed feelings on that right now.
See, no, I like going to Sabres games really early in the year. I think the vibes are still really good. The weather's still perfect. So, like, it has a little bit of the spring playoff feeling. I know people have forgotten it, and maybe some of us have never even experienced it. But you've got the sweater on and the shorts. It's still good weather. The vibes are good. It's, for me, I have a tough time when the season has gone poorly of like friends or my girlfriend in February going, you want to go to Sabres game? No. Nope. We're going to watch it here at home. And I'm going to turn it off after the first period. And I'm going to get upset. But early in the season, game number one especially, I think is a wonderful time to go. You don't know what the season's going to offer you. You can have bad vibes. You can have good vibes. But opening night, it always, usually unless there's an injury or something
until
drastic that's
the game
happened,
goes south, the vibes,
south,
are, good.
The vibes right, are good. Right. But I think opening night is always a good one to go to. Or really even, especially for sports like basketball, baseball, hockey, where there's a lot of games, that first week or two is usually a really good time to go if you can.
Yeah, that is true, because if you're able to at least start a season with some sort of hope abound, and even the most pessimistic Sabre will be like, all right, it's here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hockey is here. I may be sadist at this point, but it's here. Like,
yeah.
But I can at least enjoy it if I'm a hockey fanatic. Like, I've been suffering through it for 14 years already. What's another? So there is that, because it's something you do actually try to enjoy is hockey. Not necessarily the Buffalo Sabres right now. That would be... would that be rude to say somebody enjoys the Buffalo Sabres or mean to say to them?
No, I think... as much grief as I'll give them, I think you can still enjoy them. You can still have hope. You can still think that things are going to change.
Well, I'm just talking about the pessimistic version of the fan.
Oh, okay.
Like,
I don't know how many people are like that out there.
Enjoyed is probably not the right word right now then. But you used to love them and you're trying to hold out for it. Like, yeah, I guess hope is still there for even the most pessimistic one because they're back. The ones that have left and walked away from the team, I mean... There's something, a different conversation there that I hope we don't have to go back into for a while.
We'll talk more on the Sabres, especially next week with opening day, just a little over a week away next Thursday at home against the Rangers. But for today, I there's a few topics I want to touch on, Derek, and one especially, I know the Morning Guys have talked about it, and I know Shelton Bulldog talked about it yesterday, but it's one I kind of wanted to wait a little bit later into the week, especially when players are going to start talking and such, but I am very excited, and this is something I haven't thought about a ton, but it was a little bit in the memory bank of like, okay, that is coming. That is on the way. Stephon Diggs coming back to Buffalo is something I'm really excited for with this game. The last few for the Bills have been, I don't want to say boring, but like we talked about the Miami Dolphins and how far they've fallen and how much like that kind of just – it doesn't have maybe the same juice for some of us because we didn't grow up with the hatred. And now that they're bad, it really hasn't festered more than just, I know I'm supposed to say the Dolphins and their division rival, so it makes it super easy. You know, the Saints are an NFC team. We're not going to see them very much. Who cares? Move on. And the Jets, I think that game was more exciting just because it was week two, and you didn't really know who the Jets were, but very quickly you found out exactly who they were. This is the first game in a little bit here where I have some genuine excitement, and it's in part because, the Patriots might be feisty. Like, this game might be just a flat-out good game. Might raise your blood pressure, but it might be a good game
right.
that I'm excited for. But also it is that Stephon Diggs element. I know for many fans, he left on not the greatest of terms. And I'll even find myself there as well. His last game as a Bill was a real disappointment. The deep ball from Allen going right through his hands and him doing the whole, like, just missed it. And you're kind of like, you just missed it, not Allen.
Yep.
And that wasn't great. And I'll say it flat out, you know, especially privately, I really got annoyed very quickly at his whole mysterious angle of like, I'm not going to totally commit. I'm going to kind of commit. It got old fast. I'm not saying a player needs to love and appreciate every city they're in. That's not fair. You know, they're not always picking these cities. They learn to love them if they can, and that's great if they do. But I don't need that. It was more the fact that every offseason – it felt like we were maybe going to have Diggs drama. And it got old fast. We didn't always. And for most of it, we really didn't. But it felt like most of the off seasons, he would play around with, well, you know, it's a business. You never know.
Yeah.
And it's like, come on, man. Like, just for 5 minutes.
Pick the lane.
But to say all of that, still, and probably for the rest of my life, because I still hear Bills fans now talk about how Jerry Butler is one of their favorite Bills of all time.
Yep.
Diggs will probably be one of my favorite Bills of all time for the rest of my life. He was a player I wanted the Bills to go get when he was still a Viking. Me and my brother, like, that's something we've bonded over for years, is that we wanted him 2 years before they did. And when they did, we were both watching Disney Plus because it had just come out and was in the middle of the pandemic. And, you know, we're up late just kind of enjoying life at the time. And we're both like, oh, my God, like, this guy's here. And then not only that, not only did they make the big trade, but it was amazing. It worked. It worked so well that their quarterback became a phenom and Diggs broke a ton of receiving records. It is undoubtedly my favorite era of watching the Bills is like those 4 years where it was just like they're putting up oogles and boogles of points. Their receiver is a star. The quarterback's a star. And we're having a blast and we're having so much fun. They made a good trade because let's be honest, in Buffalo sports especially, you have the little trades that have worked out. Dominic Hasek ultimately becomes an amazing trade, but at the time it wasn't anything super
crazy. At the time it was not a big deal.
No. Usually Buffalo's on the losing end of those things. They're not on the winning end of those things, and that was one of the first times I could remember where it was undoubtedly a massive win. Because even the McCoy trade.
Well, McCoy for Kiko Alonso, that was actually a big deal.
It was a big deal because you're getting McCoy.
But the thing was is that it ultimately, that was another one of those that they do win going away pretty handily.
Yeah, because Kiko really becomes fairly quickly a one-hit wonder.
A one-hit wonder, at least in Philly. He kind of regains his form a little bit in Miami before then his career is over.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, Alonso the Eagle was not very good, whereas McCoy helped this Bills team get to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So, no apologies there. But there is it's very rare, because you mentioned those two trades, Diggs and McCoy. It's very rare that the better player comes back in a deal already known to everyone as the acquisition for Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that common that you get, oh, the Bills got the best player in this deal right away, and it's theirs. Diggs, though, also symbolized something different about this Bills regime.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the willingness to want more, the desire for more, the chase, the recognition that the quarterback is going to get better and you need to give him the proper set of weapons.
You can't have Duke Williams having 10 targets in a playoff game again.
Correct. It showed that this staff, this regime, was not here to play around. And that it opened the window. The Stephon Diggs trade opened the window for the Buffalo Bills in a championship contention. They have not succeeded in the Diggs period or after that so far either. But that second part has yet to be determined. But it started there. Because that 2020 season, Josh Allen had more of a right to an MVP than, dare I even say, the one that he won.
I still go back and forth if that is his best season.
It is statistically his best season.
Because the only that's the thing. I mean, that's in that window where he's still
Aaron Rodgers only throwing three interceptions for an entire year,
but
demon.
But that's the thing is Allen still during that window is considered a turnover machine. He only has 10 picks that year.
Yeah,
it's not that many. It's 4,500 yards passing and 37 touchdown passes.
And that is the best season that we've seen a quarterback play in a long time. And for some Bills fans and some generations of Bills fans ever. Was that season.
Mm-hmm.
So it started a new era. It turned a page. Was getting Stephon Diggs. And the ending may have been ugly. But you shouldn't at least acknowledge that, they needed that player at that time. The quarterback needed the player. The player needed the team. Diggs wanted out of Minnesota because they were going to go to a more run-centric offense. It was two sides that needed each other. And it ushered in the era of the Bills being a championship contender.
Mm-hmm.
That is the big deal. If not for one ding-dang team in the way, we might be talking about it a little differently.
Yeah, it's still somewhat difficult to talk about it because they did not win. And I've talked about that a lot of this Bills era, in 10, 15 years, it'll be difficult for me to look back fondly if they don't at least get one championship.
Correct.
If they get one championship, I can look back at 13 seconds. It'd still be painful, but you can laugh a little bit about it. You can still enjoy the game that was, what have you. And I think maybe even like the Diggs stuff as well. You wonder how a lot of Bills fans would feel about Stephon Diggs in 10 years if the Bills do get a Super Bowl without him. Because that's ultimately the thing too. Now a year and some change later, the offense has been just fine. The everyone eats thing is working.
Right.
I mean, they are chugging away. They'll put up C-plus games on offense, and they'll still score 30 points. Now, there was a period last year where it was not working, you know, when they had to go trade for Amari Cooper. It has not been smooth sailing, but for the most part, the journey's been pretty darn good. He's a player for me, and maybe I like him so much, too, because he's sort of like this, like, almost anti-hero. He's a bit of a gray character for, I think, for many Buffalo sports fans,
right.
Because as much as you do love him, I've even mentioned it. He's going to be one of my favorite Bills of all time, and yet the ending is not great. I'd argue, though, the Bills, I think, also want to move off from him. They were willing to eat $30 million in dead cap in the middle of a championship window. I think that also proves they were about done and were maybe heading into the different direction we've seen now. But even still, it was so much fun. What was it, the Sports Illustrated cover with Allen and Diggs? Yeah, it was so much fun. And I am going to be very excited to see Diggs back at Highmark Stadium, back around the Bills, what have you. With that all being said, though, the moment the game starts, he's a Patriot.
Right.
And that I have not really thought about much because of the torn ACL last year. Like Houston, it was like whatever, because you got a second round pick from the Texans and it was okay, this could be interesting, but man, Houston's loading up. I haven't thought about it too much until, relatively recently with the season starting, that he is a Patriot. And I'm like, man, I wouldn't be surprised if he did that somewhat on purpose. Knowing who Diggs is as a person, or at least feeling like we know who Diggs is as a person, at least the character that he maybe portrays to the media and on the football field, maybe there would be something of he did that on purpose. He has a great career in Minnesota, don't get me wrong. Stephon Diggs, though, becomes Stephon Diggs, and who, the NFL at large knows him by through his career with the Bills. Outside of his big moment in the divisional round, the, Minneapolis Miracle.
Right.
He's second fiddle to Adam Thielen, where with Buffalo, that 2020 season, he's an All-Pro. He goes to multiple Pro Bowls. He's a second-team All-Pro as well in one of those years as well. He was putting up arguably what could have been a Hall of Fame career if they do win a Super Bowl with him there.
That is true. He was really putting up ungodly numbers that.
And so I wouldn't be surprised if Diggs goes to the Patriots in some way to sort of spite the Bills, maybe to create Drake May. In many ways where you could argue he helped create Josh Allen.
Yeah, it'd be the guy that's like, hey, I woke up two young quarterbacks.
I'm the real QB whisperer, right?
Yes, exactly. It is kind of insane to think about. Like, his worst year being the final year in Buffalo, he still gets 1,183 yards, 8 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his worst year here. That's insane. That is his lowest amount of touchdowns in Buffalo. That's easily his lowest amount of yards as a Bill. That part is what is truly tricky to me, is that he really was putting up ungodly levels of numbers. And again, that 2020 season, when you make the trade for him, everything is unleashed. And the page is turned from being this, hey, can we be like a consistent playoff contender, to the AFC East is now ours. Brady walked away. Thanks for that. We're taking over.
Mm-hmm.
It ushered in a new era. What that era does mean, ultimately, in due time, will be told. But in the moment, as it's still going on, Stephon Diggs does signify something. When they went from a good team to a great team. And they have yet to drop that, even without Diggs.
Yeah, they've been there since. They've been a great team. That's where we've talked about. They've built up this sort of trust within the NFL of the Bills are a near sure thing. They're going to win the AFC East. If they're not the one seed, which they haven't been yet, they're going to win a wild card playoff game. But they'll probably fall short in the division round of the AFC Championship. Like, that's sort of what they've built since then. I like Diggs because I think he really does signify, like you mentioned, like that change in the organization where all of a sudden, isn't that kind of where like the Bean After Dark thing comes from? It's a late night trade. Diggs kind of ushers in also that feeling that the Bills were willing to make big boy moves. They were willing to play like we see Howie Roseman and the Eagles do for a little while now. That became the Bills' thing, that they were going to make these big trades, or they were willing to make big moves. You were going to hear about them in all of these. Even if they don't make the deal, they're going to be involved in the talks. They're going to be a team that's named. And really, I think the big part of it ultimately is that it worked. He was a 1,000-yard receiver before getting to Buffalo, but his Pro Bowls and his All-Pro come in the four seasons he's with the Bills. His best season by far, and one of the best receiving seasons we've seen in the last few years, is in 2020, where he has 127 catches, over 1,500 yards, and 8 touchdowns. He's a great overall player for them. Maybe the Bills' biggest fault, ultimately, is they don't really get a reliable number two next to him. Gabe Davis, they try for a little while there, and to be fair, after the 2021 AFC divisional game, 13 seconds, you can argue they probably made the right choice in wanting to stick with Davis. It ultimately did not work out, but they tried with Emmanuel Sanders. They tried again with John Brown as well, actually twice, because John Brown's there in 20. It just never totally got there where they'd have a reliable number two with them. But I think Diggs is also a big reason why we hear people complain about the offense. They want to go back to what that was.
They want to see another number one wide receiver again. And that is the part that people do seem to miss. And I understand that. Like, big wide receiver numbers, they're sexy. They are. Allen's still getting it done. And also, Diggs' departure helps the narrative that lands Josh Allen his MVP last year.
Yeah.
That is the other part of this that really kind of is the interesting part of that trade away to Houston. Is it helps push a different narrative that, oh, Allen had to do it with a collection of players that,
and less while than, I don't less
and,
than
and while I don't like to agree with that sort of thing, I hated that argument of like, oh, look who Josh Allen has to play with. I'm sorry, but the Bills got to 13 wins last year, and it could have been 14 if they had to try for that last one.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't do that just with one player, no matter if they are the MVP or not. I also don't like the idea of like bashing other players on a team just to prop one up. But there is that narrative there. They traded Stephon Diggs, and Allen is still doing the work that he's doing. Okay. Yeah. I think it's time we hand one to him.
And that's pretty much what happened. 803-0550, the number to call. How are you feeling about Stephon Diggs coming back to Buffalo? Not necessarily asking if you'll boo him or not. You know, it's your prerogative. You do what you got to do. But in terms of the era, Stephon Diggs is 4 years in Buffalo, him coming back to Buffalo for the first time since his trade away. If you have any thoughts, love to hear him again. Number 803-0550 if you want to join the show. Coming up a little after 11 o'clock, Sal Capaccio will join the show. The Bills get back to work today. We'll get our first injury report as well later this afternoon. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Really good about being back in the NFL.
And the right kind of guy for May, who floats one and open. Stephon Diggs down near the 10-yard line of Carolina.
Stephon Diggs returning to Buffalo, this time with the New England Patriots, who are 2-2. Have not looked the worst coming into this season. Although expectations, Derek, for them were to be better.
Their highs are high, but their lows are pretty low, though.
Yeah,
too.
Their lows are low. That is absolutely correct.
5 turnovers in a game in where the defense keeps Pittsburgh to 2 scores, and you still lose that football game. Like, that's tough. Especially there were 2 goal line turnovers in there, an interception and a fumble. You limit the Steelers to 7 points on the first 4 turnovers that you committed.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one more, and they finally score another touchdown off of it. So, yeah, their lows are pretty low, 5 turnovers in a game. But then, like, they beat the snot out of Carolina. Or they look really fascinating, and they get themselves a tough win against Miami. But then you also lost to the Raiders. You're the only team to do that now.
You're the only team to make the Raiders even look
competent.
Yeah, yeah. Pete Carroll, I kind of thought he'd bring
something to the Raiders a little bit.
It's not Pete Carroll that's my biggest problem with the Raiders.
It's really the group, but I didn't realize the group was that bad.
Yes, but it is one of these things where they are as inconsistent as a 2-2 team would be. Their record has as many wins as losses. That makes sense. Whereas the Bills...
Drake May.
The Bills have had a lot of teams where it is just, okay, get through this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think New England's going to be more interesting than that. Over the last 2 weeks, Zach, one of my messages was the Miami game. It can't be that easy, right? And the Saints game, it was. I did think that it was not going to be a football game. This one, I don't think these things. This one feels different to me. And it has to do with the fact that the Patriots have been building a little bit more right now as of late. They do have a quarterback that does seem pretty good. But I also know that their roster's not complete yet. They have a lot of work still to do, particularly on the offensive line.
And also, their last few drafts, really outside of May, you're seeing it. They are really cutting bait.
They're cutting bait early on a lot of these players, and it makes sense. But it just shows, yeah, you're not done yet. You're not done taking that step toward being, you know, part of the big boys club. But a team like this is plucky enough to win a game against a Bills. It all depends on what the Bills themselves are going to do in this one. It depends on how capable are they of being consistent themselves. The Bills have played a C-level game for 2 weeks in a row and still won by 2 scores. I don't think that New England allows you to get away with that again, as opposed to Miami. Or if you win this game, it is by 1 score. It's by 7 points or something like that. But I also think that the Bills are looking at themselves and going, we can play better than this. Because they have the opportunity to do that and nitpick through wins. You are 4-0, but we have some work to do.
I know that was a big conversation after the Baltimore game, is you get the best of both worlds. You still are 1-0, but you also can now dissect all of the problems you had. Or I know Bill Belichick, this is a thing that I think is famous. Or no, I'm sorry, not Belichick, Nick Saban. Lane Kiffin talked about this, now current head coach at Ole Miss, that Saban was harder on them after wins than he was losses. Losses, is you're going to take it from the media anyways. You know,
correct.
We're already in with a loss. A win, he was harder on them about. And so maybe it's been the same thing with the Bills, where, yeah, they're 4-0. But I've mentioned it with listeners on Twitter, and I've even said it here, I can't imagine the Bills are happy with their defensive performance.
No.
Can't imagine the Bills are happy they gave up 3 sacks to the Saints.
And now here comes the interesting catch-22 on this. Like, yeah, they scored 42 points this past Sunday against Carolina. Does that mean I have to take them that much more seriously, for example, though?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is the reactionary way to go about this. I do look at this as a Patriots team that, hey, let's see which weakness shines more here this weekend. The Bills' run defense? Or the fact that the New England Patriots can only average 101 yards on the ground a game? Their best runner averages 31 yards per contest. And that's Stevenson, who fumbles.
He's already got 2 this year. I don't know if it's lost. It's just fumbles.
It is lost, both of those.
Okay. Yeah.
And Gibson fumbled as well against Pittsburgh. But that's my thing is, can your weaknesses really be ignored for a week? Can you do it like you did with the Jets? And the Bills can. The Patriots don't run the ball necessarily well. Drake May's having a great season. It's because they can't run the football. So there's opportunity there to at least, hey, those run defense concerns, we can at least put them to bed for a week against a team that can't run the football.
You hope you put them to bed for a week.
That's what you want to see.
Yeah.
The third down defensive problem. Try to make sure you can frustrate Drake May. The pass rush, not getting home and finishing. Their pressure numbers are good, but it's about Oh, it's the hurries, not the pressures. The hurries are good. The pressure has to be better. The finish has to be there. The sacks have to be there. You're facing New England. May's taken 13 already. Do not let it be like Miami, where you hit a quarterback one time. This is opportunities to at least smooth some of the rough parts of your game. New England is good enough to keep up with you. But this is, until we get to Kansas City, this is my central message. You're the better team. Play like it.
803-0550, the number to call. Let's go to the phones. Adam is first up here. Adam, how are we doing this morning?
Not too bad, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Just wanted to talk about the luck component to this. Like every team every year has some degree of luck, whether it's with injuries or even look at the Kansas City Chiefs last year. How many games did we look at where it's like they should have lost?
100%.
Yeah. I mean, we are a Kyle Hamilton blocked field goal and two roughing the punters away from being 1-3 right now, and we're 4-0. I mean, honestly, like, you know, both of those roughing the punter penalties came at very, very critical times. And if the Dolphins and the Saints get the ball back instead of roughing our punter, I mean, there's a good probability that they score and they seal the game. I mean, Brandon Cooks was wide open. Cole Bishop blew an assignment and Spencer Rattler misses him. So I think we really need to just, like, enjoy the fact that, like, for once it might be that luck is on our side, and like, let's just go with it. You know, I mean, I'm sure, like, the team is playing C plus football and we're still winning and we're still putting up 31 points. And that kind of brings me into my next comment, just in terms of the offense, just wanted your guys' opinion on this. I feel like we're so not creative with the passing game, and I just don't understand why. You see this all the time, you know, with like your Shanahan offenses or like your McVay offenses. They scheme guys open, and it seems like, you know, we saw a little bit of this with the Kincaid touchdown pass this past weekend. Why are we not doing more of that? I really can't understand what our passing game philosophy is. You know, you watch Keon Coleman, like every single route, he's like just running down the field 12 yards and he turns around to the quarterback and that's really kind of it. So just wanted your guys' opinion on the passing game. I'll hang up and I'll listen. Thanks.
Adam, thanks for the
call. Thanks, Adam.
Starting with the luck component, I think that's just for a lot of NFL teams. You see that in most games. They're all very close for the most part. There are some blowouts where all of a sudden the turnovers, you know, stack up, teams steal possessions, and all of a sudden it's 42-13. I think that was New England and Carolina's score. But for the most part, a lot of these games end up being very close, even if the spreads have teams at like 9.5-point favorites, what have you. So, yeah, luck plays a big part in it. The teams and the differences between them are not that large. It's where quarterbacks come into being the biggest equalizer for all of this is if you have a great quarterback, a less-than team all of a sudden becomes a good or great team. In terms of the passing offense, at least for this year, I don't think we need to see a lot from them just yet. It's September, and they're playing ultimately a less-than schedule. They're not having to really go into their bag of tricks and scheme guys open and put a ton on tape. I think it's a big part of that, well, a team I don't think will ever outright say because it would signify that they're playing down to an opponent, and we already saw what happened when Robert Saleh said something that I don't ultimately think was all that egregious when he said, yeah, Jacksonville and Liam Cohen are very good at getting team signs. He said sign stealing, but ultimately the thing with Michigan and what Stallions, whatever his name is, his biggest problem was that he did it illegally. He went to practices.
Right.
And he went to games where he was not supposed to. But sign stealing is not necessarily illegal. People don't like hearing it because it sounds bad, but it's not necessarily illegal. Robert Saleh even said that. But Liam Cohen freaked out. And so that's the thing. None of these coaches are going to try to put their, you know, foot in their mouth and go, oh, yeah, I mean, look, we played the Saints. You guys saw it. We were 14.5-point favorites on FanDuel. We're going to show everything? Really? No one's going to say that or even say it nicely. Why put stuff on tape that a team like Kansas City is going to play you in a few weeks has seen?
And I'm not even going to accuse the Bills of being like that team to take a team lightly, but they did mess with their roster for the Saints game. More than any game that they have this year.
Benford's already down, or all of a sudden down. Curtis Samuel goes in. They've moved around with the defensive line a little bit.
Yeah, or It's simply, hey, let's put no Codrington today.
Mm-hmm.
And McDermott says after the game, we're looking for the best players that we have for this team for the season. You picked this game. I'm not accusing anything, but the timing's awfully interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So the other part, the luck that Adam brings up, I would love some of the Kansas City Chiefs devil magic from last year. Actually, it'd be great.
That's the thing, too. And I've heard from a lot of callers, just obviously working the afternoon show and then even here, mentioning that like the Chiefs were winning games in way worse fashion last year.
Yeah.
And still got to a Super Bowl. Like they could not score. They genuinely had to have last-minute moments.
Blocked field goal, fumbled snap by the Raiders.
What have you.
Like, overtime against the Panthers.
Mm-hmm. They were genuinely surviving by the skin of their teeth. Some games did look good. I'm not going to deny that. I mean, the Bills had to play them close last year. And ultimately, the Bills have to go for it on a fourth down, turns into the play of the year, but they have to do that to really close the door on them. And Derek, you've mentioned it, though. They're winning by 12 against the Saints. They're winning by 10 against Miami. Most normal games, you cover the spread comfortably, and you're like, yeah, all right, cool, sweet, got out of there, ended it late, perfect. If the Bills were playing, and this is, it's a big thing that I'm kind of wrestling with, too. If the Bills were playing perfect in September, isn't that kind of a bad thing? If you're playing your best football in September.
Right.
It's probably not a good thing. Saints last year, lighting the league on fire for like the first month or so, and they completely tailspin. Even right now, look at this. Green Bay looks incredible through the first 2 weeks. They then lose to Cleveland and tie Dallas. And now all of a sudden, they've gone down a little bit.
The Kansas City Chiefs last year, and I'm not accusing the Bills of being this because they're winning a little bit prettier than the Chiefs did all of last year. Until their first loss against Buffalo in Week 11, they have two games that don't end in one score. There's your telltale sign that it is not the same thing.
Yeah, Bills have already surpassed that.
The Bills have already surpassed that, but also, it does seem like it's more comfortable even when they're not playing their best game. It's more comfortable at the end of the day. I don't worry necessarily about this because I do think that ultimately the better team will win the football game. Is that arrogant of me? Yes. I'm not on the team, though.
Right. I'm not on the team.
I also do think that it allows me to have a little bit of this because that's what cheering for a good team is. You should expect these things. You shouldn't be worried when the analysts pick the Bills to have a sweep against New Orleans. There should be a little bit of this arrogance. And there should also be a little bit of the, okay, I don't love what I just saw. But then you look over and go, I'm still won by two scores. All right.
Well, yeah, and I will say to the caller's point,
they didn't play
too
pretty, and they still won by two scores.
Yeah, I will say to the caller's point, though, too, come later in the season, I do want to see more guys getting schemed open. I do all of a sudden want to see, like, all right, you're in your bag of tricks. Like, here we go.
And what do the Bills do with this group now, with this era? They turn it on after October.
They
really do. Even the year that put us through hell, 2023, they turn it on after they hit 6-6. We're thinking McDermott could get fired at this point. The Dunn article gets dropped. Like, it's chaos. Hell in a handbasket. What do? Last 2 months of the year, they do what they do, which is refuse to lose in December and January. It is an outright refusal from them. This team knows when to turn it on. The only difference between this year and last year is there's no losses already.
And arguably, they're tougher games are going to be later in the season. It's going to be an interesting November, December for them with, you know, Eagles and even Chiefs and stuff like that. Should be fun. 803-0550, the number to call. Sal Capaccio coming up at 11 o'clock. Sabres pregame tonight at 6 for a 7 p.m. puck drop at home against Pittsburgh. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Yoshida sends one to center field. Raffaello's going to come in. Sogard to the plate. Masa Yoshida delivers. And Boston now leads it 2-1 as they get to the bullpen in Luke Weaver.
Boston ultimately takes a game one of their wild card series against the Yankees 3-1. Some other games that went on. Cubs earlier in the afternoon take down the Padres 3-1 as well. The afternoon got underway with the Tigers taking down the Guardians 2-1. Could absolutely be in for the ultimate collapse, ultimately not being that. The Tigers beat the Guardians in that wild card series. Everything for the like last month just goes away for me. I'm good that you lost the division if you can move on in the playoffs. And then later on in the evening, Dodgers pretty comfortably take down the Reds 10-5. We are going to talk with Sal Capaccio. I am going to bring up the Yankees, but we also have a resident Yankees fan with us currently.
I saw a tear run down Joe Calley's face when that highlight played.
Yeah, there were no tears. Just you saw my face turn beet red. Just, that's what you saw.
It was just that one. I saw it. It was that one tear, just that one.
So ultimately, the Yankees, I mean, it's not said in that highlight. Red Sox win 3-1. Bottom of the ninth, though, bases loaded, no outs. Not a single run scores.
It's borderline poverty franchise. Like, that's borderline where we're at this point. You can't get it done in the big moments. Aaron Boone, since 2018, like, it's just, I don't know, man. I really don't. It's at the point now where, yeah, baseball isn't huge around here, right? You kind of pick your team wherever. My family's full of Yankees fans, so it's just something I've grown up with. And it is, after last year, the bottom of the fifth in their final game, the bottom of innings just seemed to be the undoing, right? This time it wasn't in the field, though. It was at bat. How do you not score? No outs, bases loaded. I just don't get it. I genuinely don't get it. And you pull your ace, your best pitcher, 6.25? What are we doing?
Yesterday was a day of pitching, too. I mean, the Tigers win ultimately. It's a 2-1 game. They win because Scooble stays in, I think, well into the seventh inning. He has 14 strikeouts.
They let him run with it. Yeah. It was his game.
It was his game.
That's what you needed to do.
Man, everything
would have won with one run.
That's the thing.
They would have won.
They ultimately only score one run. I was locked into that game. I had to drive home in the middle of it, so I missed some of the middle portions of the game. But the last like few innings, I was locked in. I thought it was over for Boston. Aroldis Chapman, who has been on fire as a relief closer for them for the last month and a half, 2 months, giving up like no hits over the last month. Disaster in the bottom of the ninth, and then recovers. I feel bad. I do enjoy watching a pitcher get themselves out of a jam.
It's fun.
But man, it's fun. If you're a Yankees fan waking up this morning, that is a tough loss. And really, I love the wild card series, these best of three games, because today,
we know what's going to happen.
Four team seasons are on the line. You lost one game, and now it's, you win or you're out. It's over. And then we're on to the divisional series. I love it.
I will say, the other part of it was, there was a stolen base that proves to be a big deal. Because that little blooper that happens after that is, okay, here we go. And I don't know how. Well, I mean, that makes it 3-1, and it just like it changes a little bit of the course of the game, too, of, okay, now it just got that much harder for the Yankees. And then the Yankees loaded up. No outs.
It was insane. They couldn't advance any runner in the next three at bats.
They get to the mound and talk with Chapman, and I'm serious about this. I'm not serious about this. I'm actually very much kidding. I hope that they like tapped Chapman on the shoulder and said purple, and then like a sleeper agent, his arm, like his tendons, like loosened up, and it was just, all right, here we go. We're throwing 101, unquestioned. Stanton takes that first check swing high because he saw blood in the water. And once that happened, I'm like, he's going to go off speed once he gets Stanton in a bad spot.
And
84-mile-an-hour splitter.
Stanton's swing, by the way, I just have to say, I don't understand it to this day. He doesn't rotate his hips at all and somehow hits home runs, so the weirdest swing in baseball.
It's kind of been his whole thing.
You saw a batter that was out for blood.
Oh, yeah.
And once that happened, it was recognized.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. We'll get Sal Capaccio's thoughts on the Yankees' loss last night as well as he joins the show coming up next. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Hour number two rolls along here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever.
Hey, it's Jeremy White
and Joe DiBiase,
and we host Jeremy and Joe, your daily destination for Buffalo sports talk.
All Bills, all Sabres, all the time.
Did you know that Jeremy and Joe is both a radio show and a podcast? You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search for Jeremy and Joe, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
You're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Let's get connected to our fans before we talk to Sal Capaccio, and that is brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We go back to the phone. William is up next. William, how are we doing this morning?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I'll make it quick. I was a little disturbed about the tackling on the Bills' defense.
Mm-hmm.
I know the defensive front, that's another you know, issue. But when it comes to open field tackling, like I mentioned before, I played high school football. My coach always told us to look at the waist and the hips when you tackle a person, because they can always switch their head back and forth and their eyes swing back. And I was just wondering if the Bills, like when they, you know, when they practice or even spring training, does the defensive coordinator tell them to look at the waist when they make tackles or not? I was just wondering.
Yeah, William, thanks for the call. Their tackling was horrific. A lot of missed tackles. I don't think they even lead the league, though. Fun enough. I think it's some of the worst teams. Jets, I think, lead the league in missed tackles and such. Just something not to, you know, age profile you or anything like that. But I heard Steve Tasker talking about this as well earlier this week about the lack of tackling, and people have brought up, you know, back in my day or back in the day, what have you. And he did mention, I think this is correct to bring up, tackling techniques have absolutely changed because the rules have changed. And so now you're having to get better. Now, the tackling technique he brought up, the hips thing, that hasn't changed necessarily. Quarterbacks can't go low, but that's not really open field tackling. Now,
but also you're looking at running backs that are, you know, they're putting their head down a little bit more when it comes to the contact. Like, how are you looking at the waist at that point? It's about pursuit angles, too. Is really part of the Bills' tackling woes is the angle and pursuit, and therefore they're not giving themselves the best chance to make said tackle.
No, I mean, when you're going up against certain tight ends and you go high, I'm just lost at it. I'm completely lost by that decision.
That is also true. It still has to do with, though, angles are also a part of the issue. The Saints touchdown run.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the guy's name.
To Keandre Miller?
Yes. But Rapp comes in at a bad angle, and he doesn't really give himself the best opportunity to make that tackle. And then Trey White, I didn't love what happened on that play with him. He has a chance to bring him down, and he doesn't. So there's plenty of nuance to it other than strictly technique that you can go ahead and you can dive into that into a greater problem. It is a greater problem, and not one solution is a fix-all, but it does need to get better.
Yeah. Let's get someone else's thoughts on this. We go to the Western Hotline. Sal Capaccio joins us. Sal, good morning. I will leave the Yankees things for later. We'll get you in a good mood, but you know, we'll get there later. Bill's tackling. It has been a bit of an issue. We just took a call there as well. So what have you seen?
Yeah, I think angles are an issue that you said in a couple of runs. It's not like it's every day and every game and every play, but angles can be an issue for sure. I didn't like the fact that they went a little high on some of the guys last week. Like, you got to go down low. You got to wrap up the legs, especially, I remember specifically Juwan Johnson, a big tight end. He grabs the ball and, like, you're trying to tackle him up high. Like, he's bigger than you. You can't do that. You got to go down low and you got to wrap him up, right? I think that's another area. And then I think the biggest thing for me, and this is, it's always tough. You want to go as fast as possible. You want to just, you know, you got to play football fast. There's no doubt about that. But I do think that there's something to be said for breaking down and slowing down when you get to a ball carrier. And I look at Joey Bosa. He crashes down, and he's in the backfield, and Kamara has it, and he has him, right? He has him for a loss. And Kamara kind of goes by him because Joey's reaching at him with his arms. And I thought to myself, boy, I get it. Like, Joey Bosa's that's what he does. He makes plays in the backfield, and you never want to take that away from him. But in that moment, he probably needed to break down a little bit force Kamara to slow his feet, because even if he doesn't make the tackle, someone else comes in quickly to make the tackle, right? I think about this for Trey White a couple weeks ago against Tua. You remember when Trey White had Tua in the backfield on a blitz?
Yep.
Tua breaks. Tua just spins. If Trey just, I know he's going fast, he wants a sack, he's got to get there. But maybe that just as he gets there, he kind of takes a second to kind of settle his body down to make sure. It's a tough needle to thread, because tackling and playing football in general just requires you to go 100 miles an hour, you say, and just go super fast. When you go to tackle a ball carrier, though, in one-on-one, you can't just grasp. You have to break down and make sure you do it properly, because even if you don't get him down, if you force that guy to be hesitant at all, then hopefully that allows other people to come and help you.
And so, Sal, let's maybe start with the Bills' defense. That, I think, is maybe most people's complaints, even with the Bills sitting at 4-0, and I can fully understand them. I will say, though, and this is something I've kind of gotten into more as we've now entered the period where some of the IR guys, we can start making decisions there. Are they going to be coming back to practice? Are they going to start that window to maybe being active in a few weeks, what have you? The suspended guys, we're still a few weeks away. But how much, Sal, are you sitting here kind of waiting for that full complement, the cavalry to arrive, if you will, for this Bills defense before you really want to make a decision on them? Because I know also it's been brought up as well, the trade deadline. You know, I think Jeremy and Joe were bringing it up yesterday, the idea of like, what position do you want to go add? And at least for me personally, I'm sitting here going, man, I kind of want to wait to see what Michael Hoyt looks like, at least for PFF grades. He was top 10 in run defense.
He is the guy I'm most excited about for the Bills to add and coming back, because it's not what he's done in the past. And you bring up that point there with his grading. But I love what I saw in preseason and camp from him. Mm-hmm. I just think he was really good for the Bills, and the role will be super interesting because he can play alternate spots around the front seven, kind of. And I really wonder what the Bills' plan is. And it's funny, you know, the Bills knew, with Ogunjobi, they didn't know till like right when they signed him what was going on. They knew about Michael Hoyt when they signed him, and they said, hey, you want to sign him? They knew that he had this suspension coming, and they still elected to. And if you heard the Bills and you remember when they talked about signing him, we asked the Bills about that. They said we had been watching him or monitoring him for a couple of years. And I'm thinking, boy, that means they got a plan for him, right? Like, there's the role is going to be interesting. So I do think that when you say, like, how important is it? How much am I looking forward to? I think that is certainly something. But now we're still three games away from that happening. In the meantime, we'll find out here about a half hour from now, a little after that. Sean McDermott's going to talk to the media, give us an update on Matt Milano and Ed Oliver. And those are two really big pieces to the middle of your defense, guys. I mean, it's not just losing a Milano. It's not just losing an Oliver. When you compound that by having two really important players who play right in the middle of your defense, the closest to the ball, like, that's a big issue. And I think that is something that if these guys, the Bills can get these guys back healthy, I think that could be a really big benefit, because think of the domino effect. Now you can allow Dorian Williams to be a backup and more of a special teams guy. Now you can allow Shaq Thompson to do that. Now you don't have to rely as much on Deion Walker, who's, by the way, playing tremendous, and TJ Sanders, because you have Ed Oliver. I just think that it matters to everything that happens beyond them as well.
Sal, you mentioned the fact that they're going to be getting the injury report out there. Another player to be watching with a little bit of interest here is if there is a better update and more positive update on Spencer Brown. Ryan Vandermark had, we'll call it a tough game this past Sunday.
Yeah, he was better in the run game than I think people might realize. But I think in the pass game, he got beat a couple of times. We saw that. It wasn't just on him. There were other guys, too, that got beat in the pass game. That's a good front. But they got to Josh Allen more than you want to see. And I just think it underscores how important Spencer Brown is, you know, to the Buffalo Bills line. It felt like, and even Spencer's own words, he was going to play last week. He didn't. You have a division game this week. I'd be pretty surprised as I sit here now, unless he had some sort of setback, if we don't see Spencer Brown out there on Sunday night against the New England Patriots. But he's a very big part of what they want to do. I mean, you know, if you don't have a guy like Spencer Brown, you don't have a guy like Deion Dawkins, you have to think about how that looks in pass protection. And do you have to leave a tight end on this side? Do you have to put a running back over there to help out? And if they're in there and you don't have to do that, those are guys that can do other things for you to help out, go out in the pass game, you know, and be a guy that you can actually throw the ball to instead of keeping in the block. So, again, it's the domino effect and how all these things matter.
Sal Capaccio here on the West Her Hotline. Sal, Bill's taking on another divisional opponent this week, the New England Patriots, Sunday Night Football. Patriots, a little bit of a weird bird, to be perfectly honest. They're 2-2. They're two wins. They've put up a lot of points. They're two losses. They haven't scored more than 14. Drake May's having a very good year. They can't seem to run the ball, though, but they've been very good in the run defense. Christian Gonzalez isn't there really until last week, and their pass defense is showing that. They're pretty low in terms of passing yards per attempt. But they're definitely an interesting team with Mike Vrabel at the helm in his first season.
Yeah, and I think you could point right to their turnovers, some of their offensive issues. And they turned the ball over, what, four times, I think it was, against the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Five.
Five, thank you. And I think two are right near the goal line or in the red zone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Steelers, even Cam Hayward said, they were very aware of that and who was on the field. I think it was Stevenson, who he specifically, you know, they were asking him about. But the point is, like, they've had ball security issues. One of those turnovers was a Drake May interception, or he threw it right to a defender as he's trying to squeeze a ball in, you know, into the end zone. So those are things the Bills are going to look to force. They're going to look to force them. And when the Patriots have taken care of the ball, they've been a much better team. They really took care of the ball last week against the Carolina Panthers, and look at the result. Now, I will say, though, you guys should go look at that box score of Carolina-New England. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't think that they won the way they did.
No, that's absolutely right.
Out,
yeah.
But Carolina actually, I mean, they might have even outgained them, but it was close. Like, The stats were not super one-sided, but the Patriots cashed in on opportunities, and they had a big special teams play. And those are the things that can, you know, swing ball games. And the Bills generally have been very good in the turnover. I mean, they're excellent. They're setting records. And that danger of not having that turnover differential be at least even, if not go their way, after Josh's interception. But then Cole comes up, Bishop with the interception. And they've, what, 26 straight games of not losing the turnover battle, and that's a big reason why the Bills win. So I would point right to that being a direct factor. And I do think, I would say, though, the Patriots are not yet quite good enough all around to overcome those mistakes, right? And if they're going to give the ball away, their margin for error is much, much less.
Sal, I was going to ask about Cole Bishop, and you brought him up there. He makes that play against New Orleans for the interception, and it does look like the uncertainty surrounding the second-year safety is starting to come around. He's looking very athletic, probably like the most athletic player in the secondary next to Benford, I might say, but Cole Bishop really does seem to be figuring things out 4 weeks in.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is confidence, Derek. Mm-hmm. And making a play like that last week just really amplifies that confidence now. And I think Cole Bishop, even last year, confidently thought, okay, I should be playing. Like, that's the way he presents himself, is he's confident. But he wasn't ready. He wasn't ready health-wise. He missed a lot of time. He wasn't able to get on the field. And then you go into this year with the door right there, wide open for you to walk into a starting spot. And what happens? He gets hurt during training camp. And now your confidence starts to waver. And you're not trusting everything you're doing. You're trying to be perfect. When you're trying to be perfect, you're going to make mistakes. You can't be perfect. And I think that he's been more free because he's been more confident. And because he's been more confident, more free, I think that's why you're seeing the athletic plays being made. That play he made last week was a sensational athletic play. But what impressed me more than even the athleticism, I think, was how he understood what was happening and where to go and where to be at that right moment to get that interception. He comes all the way from the other side of the field, essentially. He's like in the middle, but he's more actually to the right of the defense. He makes the interception all the way to the left of the defense because he saw and trusted through film study and confidence and what he was doing out there through the reps that he had. So I agree with you. And then this week's just another week. Like, he's not a finished product on it by any means. He's not even close to it. He's got to keep going. He's got to keep learning. He's got to keep getting better. And here's another week for him to be able to do that.
Yeah, Sal, I mean, you mentioned it. The amount of ground he covered. Nate, I heard on the overtime show mentioning, like, just where how far he was over and coming over. It was a key play for them. We took some calls as well, like mentioning kind of like some of like the luck elements the Bills have run into the last few weeks. And look, you take it for what it is. The Kansas City Chiefs, Derek kind of pointed it out too. They were winning a lot of their games last year, one scores and genuinely coming down to the wire in a lot of these games. The Bills, though, have also themselves run into some luck. They've had the roughing the punter, penalties in back-to-back weeks. And this week ultimately winds Cameron Johnson in on injured reserve. They do bring in a new punter in Mitch Wishnowsky. But, you know, Sal, it's been said a lot for the Bills these first 4 weeks. They've maybe, quote-unquote, played like their C game. Is that something you've seen? Or I guess where I'm sitting at with this is it's September football. I kind of don't want them playing their best.
Huh. I mean, I think anybody would tell you, whether it's coaches or players, like, there's certainly room for improvement. There's certainly – they have not played, like, their most complete or best game. I don't know if you ever feel like that. I mean, maybe the perfect game against New England, you'd see them
maybe,
say that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But I don't know if you ever really get there, right? There's always things you – always plays you want back, always plays you could have wanted differently. I mean, there was a play that Josh was talking about where, you know, he had Dalton maybe where he was open, and he's like, man, I should have thrown it to him there. And, you know, I think he took off and ran. Maybe it was that play. But either way, the point is, you go back, you look at these things, you say, those are things that you have to think about, could have gone a little bit differently, a little bit better. I do think that they've played their C game at times, if you want to put it that way. And, you know, when that second quarter was not good yet last week, they didn't play up to their standard. That's, to me, what it's more about. It's not A, B, or C. It's up to their standard. And, you know, when they go a couple punts, an interception, they have penalties backing them up. That's not their standard. They're better than that. And what's wild to me is you still have that happen. You still score 31 points in back-to-back weeks. I mean, it just shows you how good they can be and how good they are even without that. And then what is the ceiling? And is there a ceiling? Because, I mean, they have an ability, I think, to really just score every time they touch the football on offense. And then on defense, we all know what the issue is right now. Look at the stats. They're right there.
Yeah.
It's run defense. And it's tackling, like you said. And people talk about the scheme. I mean, the scheme can only do so much for you. If you're in a position to make a tackle, make a tackle. And, yeah, there's going to be times you're caught out of position. I did a stat yesterday. I don't know if you guys saw it. Bills have been hurt on QB scrambles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right? Like, you got to be – like, that's maybe something in scheme. You know, us having a spy. You know, Matt Milano right now. How much does that impact it? But you have an opportunity to – keep a quarterback bottled up. You got to keep him bottled up. Now, here's the great news. They're tops in the league. Number one in pass defense. We could talk about all the quarterbacks they played. That's fine. Justin Fields and Spencer Rattler in there. They also played Tua. They also played Lamar Jackson, of course, right? They're number one in pass defense, and that's great. You want to be there. You got to be better in run defense, I think, to allow them to not have to, you know, not tell a team you could be one-dimensional and just run the ball on us, because the Ravens did that and didn't make mistakes until the final quarter. If you're relying on a team to make mistakes, that's not a good strategy. So you need to force them into making mistakes, and the way you do that is put them in situations where they have to press the issue a little bit.
And one of those guys, Sal, Derek already mentioned one of the, I think, the big positives on defense, but one of the guys I think it's trending towards, he maybe has the potential to be that kind of guy that forces teams into making mistakes, Deion Walker. Sal, really since training camp, and when we all kind of found out, like, oh, he's healthy. Like, there was an injury he was dealing with in Kentucky and into the preseason and now into the season. He continues to just be one of the bright spots for a Bills team that they're ultimately – they're getting some good contributions from their later-round rookies, Jackson Hawes, of course, and then Deion Walker. But I'd say this, even if, you know, T.J. Sanders was pretty darn good and Max Harrison was pretty darn good and we were seeing stuff from him, I still think Deion Walker would be their most impressive rookie. It seems like he is just a hellraiser from the word go. He's a better run defender, I think, than people were giving him credit for out of Kentucky. I wonder what is the ceiling for him.
Yeah, I think the Bills could have maybe found a real big find here and excellent draft pick in the fourth round, right? I mean, we talk a lot about misses and this guy, he's not playing, and Landon Jackson's not playing, and you know, T.J. Sanders, and then here's Deion Walker in the fourth round, and here's Jackson Hawes in the fifth round, and these guys are making big contributions. The draft is funny, right? That's the way it is. Goes sometimes. You know, you draft because of the prospect and what the player you think they could be, but then people actually turn out to be something else, and whether that's for good or for bad or for indifferent, that happens. And I think right now, Deion Walker is rewarding the Bills with making him a fourth round pick and looks like an excellent, excellent player. But you know, he's still got work to do, like everybody else. And you know, what's going to happen here is, teams are going to see him more on film. They're going to figure out ways to try to attack him, and he's going to have a response to that. He's going to figure out, okay, well, they're doing this to me to neutralize me or try to neutralize me. What do I need to do? But I do love his game. I love that you know, he's making an impact, and really they need him to right now with that Oliver out. And we'll see what happens this week with that Oliver. Like I said, we'll hear from Sean McDermott a little before noon here on if he's going to practice. If the Bills can get Ed Oliver back in the middle of their defense, that'll be great news to pair him with a guy like Deion Walker because, as we know, guys, Ed Oliver is a lot better when you can have a big body next to him to tie guys up and worry about.
Yep, 100%. Sal, I'm sorry. We do have to talk about it. yesterday, the Yankees. I was locked in. I have no rooting interest. I mean that wholeheartedly. I had no rooting interest. Yeah. I was locked into that ninth inning. And I was getting excited for the Yankees. Bases loaded, no outs. And then Chapman wakes up, and it's three straight outs. They're not able to advance any runner. I think they're the first team in MLB postseason history to have the bases loaded, no outs, in the bottom of the ninth, and not score a run and lose. How are you feeling at around 11:30 this morning?
That's a terrible stat. I'm sorry. But, you know, yeah, what's up with Chapman? He's throwing like 95, 96 for the first three batters. Suddenly he's throwing 101. I'm like, what is going on here?
Derek has a theory that he's a sleeper agent. The manager went out there, said the code word, and he was locked in.
Yeah, I know, right? And by the way, I mean, he had a great year, Aroldis Chapman. Of course, mm-hmm. you know, he's with the Yankees. And, you know, they didn't – I was very worried they wouldn't score. And the reason was because I knew that they had Stanton coming up, who I know he went through a little great spurt there towards the end. But, you know, he's kind of an all-or-nothing guy. And, you know, when he's facing pitchers like Chapman, you know, he's, again, all-or-nothing. And he's been swinging through a lot of stuff. So I figured, okay, maybe if Chapman strikes out here – now they just need a double play, and that's not how it turned out. But once Chapman got the out on Stanton,
mm-hmm.
that changed the equation, and now he has two lefties he can face, because if you get one more batter in, I think there was a righty coming up after that, you know, and you never know, you might get something going there. But all I kept saying, I was watching the game with Max, and I'm like, just give me a single, They get a single, they tie the game. Judge is probably scoring.
Right, absolutely. You
know? But it didn't happen. Look, I mean, everything, they got to win tonight. Don't win tonight, your season's over. If you do win tonight, I mean, you know, Yankees, Red Sox at Yankee Stadium for Game 3, and I guess that's the way baseball should be. I did see today and hear today when I got in the car this morning, some of you, I think I was listening, my radio was still on MLB radio, because that's how I started listening to the game last night.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever was doing the show said, and I didn't realize this, since this wild card format came in the way it is, no team has lost the first round after winning the first game. Sorry. So, like, anybody who's gone up 1-0 has gone on to win the series. Now, it's a small sample size, only a few years. Only like 4 or 5 even gone to Game 3. But apparently the winner of Game 1 always wins the series. So it's up to the Yankees to try and change that now.
Real quick, Sal, because we got to let you go and go listen to McDermott coming up here in just about a half hour. But how have you felt about, like, this wild card format? Like, I am somebody – I know Shulman Bulldog joke about it. Like, they didn't realize the playoff format, and they had to learn it, like, you know, in the last, like, month or so.
Yeah.
I kind of enjoy, though, this 3-game series. There's so much intensity right away. I mean, you know, we have Tigers Guardians at 1 p.m., and you're like, nah, baby, this is a Game 7 type atmosphere at 1 in the afternoon on a Tuesday.
So I love the fact that you have more teams in the playoffs. I do like that they added the wild card and they have the teams in the playoffs. I don't know if I love the way the seeding, but that might be because I'm biased right now, because the Yankees mm-hmm. were tied with the best record in the AL and they get the 4 seed, right?
Yep.
It's like in hockey, and you know you have a great record, but because of where your division you're in. Now that said, look, when I was very, very little, there was in hockey they would have a best of 3, I think, to start the NHL, and then it went to best of 5. And I mostly remember best of 5, but anyway, I grew up more a best of 5, best of 7 guy, and best of 3 is tough. So yes, I get it. I don't think that's wrong what you're saying, and I agree with you 100% that, you know, going with a best of 3, just intensity right away. Every pitch matters. I kind of feel like, though, man, you just have one little bad game.
Right.
You have one bad outing for a pitcher, and, like, your season could be over. So that's tough to deal with. But, again, I'm also talking in the moment as a Yankee fan who lost last night.
Nope, but I totally get it, though, because it kind of takes away from, you know, something with baseball especially where it's like, you get, you know, these extended periods. They are long series even in the regular season. But, all right,
you play 162 games.
Right?
And then you have one bad game. It's like, your season's mm-hmm. over. But, hey, I mean, I get it, though. You can't – we already play a little bit long enough anyway when it comes to baseball, if you know what I mean.
Probably. That's probably fair. All right, Sal, we'll let you get going, and we'll talk again soon. Thanks, man.
You got it, guys. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Sal.
Sal Camacho there on the Western Hotline. Tonight on The Bump for the Yankees, that game at 6 o'clock. Carlos Rodon. We'll see what happens. Brian Bellow for the Red Sox. Cannot wait. I enjoyed watching all the baseball yesterday. I watched a little bit of Dodgers-Reds. I should not say all the baseball. I watched a little bit. Dodgers went up early. And
everyone
was like, right.
Flocked to the televisions when that ninth inning got real with Chapman there.
Got interesting real fast.
Got real interesting real fast. Didn't care your rooting interest if you were neutral like me or if you were a Yankees or a Red Sox fan. Everyone was crowding around it yesterday, and it's like, oh, boy. Let's see what happens here. And seriously, to see Chapman not throw 100 mile an hour until they get to the mound, and it's like, I know I'm joking when I say it, but like, banana hammock. And then the next thing you know, 101, 102. Like,
mm-hmm. Tigers Guardians, game two, in about an hour and a half just after 1 o'clock. And Tigers took game one. Could be rewriting history on one of the worst collapses we've seen in baseball if they win this series against the Guardians. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer. We have not mentioned a new starting quarterback in the NFL. We'll do that when we come back. You're listening to WGR. Hour number two continues to roll along here on a Wednesday. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We have a new starting quarterback in the NFL. Jackson Dart got his first start, a win over the LA Chargers. Congratulations to him. It was a solid performance. I put him on my honorable mentions. Wasn't anything crazy.
Right.
I know Jeremy went through the stats too, right? Wasn't anything crazy. I was just more impressed that he went up against the Chargers and did get that win. And I heard the caller even mention too, you know, in terms of QB wins, Drake May maybe doesn't have one as quality as Jackson Dart.
And is why QB wins is such a,
it's a ridiculous
flawed
stat.
Argument all the time.
But in terms of just career wins, I think it's probably right. Jackson Dart starts his career off with a great one. The new quarterback, though, kind of unsurprising if you've watched any of the Cleveland Browns offense. Joe Flacco's been benched. Dylan Gabriel is going to be the starting quarterback this week. I believe they play the Texans, I believe is what's coming up next for them.
I'm sure Deion Sanders won't say anything in the media about this.
So on that
clip that, Joe.
Shedeur Sanders is going to be the third string quarterback. So it'll be Joe Flacco's the backup, Dylan Gabriel the starter, Shedeur Sanders the third string quarterback. Less so on Shedeur, but just more Gabriel. And this is not that I desperately want to see Shedeur play or anything like that. It is really.
Hey, it's Jeremy White
and Joe DiBiase.
And we host Jeremy and Joe, your daily destination for Buffalo sports talk.
All Bills, all Sabres, all the time.
Did you know that Jeremy and Joe is both a radio show and a podcast? You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search for Jeremy and Joe, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
More just Gabriel. I don't find him to be an interesting quarterback prospect. He doesn't really have any NFL traits. I know Joe talked about it this morning. Like, you know, we are getting to a point where, yeah, I kind of do want taller, bigger quarterbacks that are more getting closer to physical specimens, where for years, you know, Brady and Manning have both talked about this. Brady, I know, definitely. I think Manning has as well, that football kind of allowed them to play like the one position they could play as a professional. They're not necessarily amazing athletes,
yep,
but quarterback allowed them to play in the NFL. That kind of guy is going away. Even the statuesque guys, Jared Goff, Matthew Stafford, have elite arm talent. Stafford still is maybe one of the best guys at the no-look pass.
And I will say with Goff and Stafford, they still have enough movement to manipulate a pocket.
Yeah, I don't know if Peyton Manning was ever that guy. Even with some of his rushing touchdowns, it is painful to watch some of those
highlights.
That naked
book that faked everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was so slow.
And excuse me, the Browns are going to be taking on the Vikings, not the Texans.
Yeah, and isn't that at Tottenham?
I believe that's right.
In Tottenham.
It's a good stadium. Bill Stadium will look like that.
Cool.
I believe that was one of like the main templates for New Highmark Stadium was Tottenham Stadium.
But I will say, it is going to be interesting to see what Dylan Gabriel does against a Vikings team that is already overseas.
Mm-hmm.
So they have that advantage rolled into there. And then you're choosing now to put a rookie in when you have to travel overseas.
It's not the greatest decision. I think the problem is, though, how good that defense is playing.
Yeah, but it ranks like only 15th on like bad Browns decisions in the last 4 years.
That's my thing. I don't really. I mean, I said it yesterday with Jackson Dart. I don't.
So messed up to say that.
But I don't hate the decision to go to the rookie to give some juice. Joe Flacco looked horrific.
You can't. He's not playable anymore.
No.
And
look, age gets to everybody. He had a few, you know, real nice moments, including with Cleveland at the end of his career, where you're like, oh man, all right. Like,
but you could see it in Indy though.
Yeah. And now we're there. My problem with Gabriel is I don't really think
hugely draftable with his physical talents. He's kind of the antithesis of like what I've talked about of, go draft a rookie quarterback, go draft the project that you can maybe trade away eventually. Joe Milton is sort of like that guy. Dylan Gabriel is sort of like, if the Bills had done that, I'd feel like they'd be spitting in my face. It's the Jake Fromm pick, where there just really isn't anything there. Great college player. You kind of know he's not going to be an NFL player. He is very accurate. That was a big thing when he was at Oregon. He can move around pretty well. But ultimately, he's a very small guy. He does not really have an NFL arm. And this is the one issue, at least this week, that they have him going up against. The overseas thing, I think, kind of is whatever to me. It is more, he's going up against a Brian Flores defense that loves to blitz and will blitz the hell out of you. And it's going to be his first start. And I'm kind of waiting for how bad this could get. It's, look, you can even add in that, overseas will play an element of it. For me, it's just more, it's a Brian Flores defense coming off a bad game against the Steelers.
Yeah, they're pissed.
They're going to blitz the hell out of Gabriel.
Yeah, and you want to talk about setting a person up for failure. There it is. But again, this like ranks at 15th on like the Browns' bad decision list in the last 4 years. But yeah, Gabriel was a really weird pick because I remember like we were doing all of our work with this, and on that draft night and that draft weekend, they take Gabriel, and you and I started laughing.
Well, especially because the whole premise there too was like, man, Shador fell past Gabriel. Oh no!
He
wasn't even on the team yet, but it was just like, oh.
For
really?
Me, it started with they took Gabriel.
Mm-hmm.
The guy was seen as like maybe a sixth or a seventh. I would have taken Joe Kelly's favorite prospect, Will Howard, over that. as we get the arm pump there from Joe, or Zach's best friend Quinn Ewers.
I mean, Ewers at least, I complain about Ewers all the time, but he at least has NFL traits. He has an NFL arm.
Yeah. It just, Gabriel said none of that to me. And I remember thinking, and I'm like, okay, why are you doing this? And like, that's where everyone started to think, oh, is the league sending a message? Because Dylan Gabriel just got drafted.
Mm-hmm.
And while I don't know the length of that, it's also still just a bad pick in general in the third round to take a quarterback like that in a very bad quarterback draft class where you could have had him pretty much in any round you wanted to.
Yeah, I don't think there was ever a fear that he was going to be taken off the board anytime soon. For me, though, it was also, aren't you planning on taking a quarterback next year? Now, with this being said, I know what Mike Shope talked a lot about, the years before Allen, which was just take quarterback. Until you have one, just keep taking them. And I don't disagree with that. My thing, though, has always been take one that I think has a shot of being good in the NFL.
Yeah.
It's not that he's just short. Baker Mayfield is short. Baker Mayfield also has a top 10 arm in the league.
Baker Mayfield always can make all the throws.
He can make all of the throws. I don't think Gabriel can throw outside the numbers. Just flat out. I don't think he can. And then you add in the fact that he's shorter. We talked about Russell Wilson, maybe a Hall of Fame career. That guy didn't throw over the middle. He spent pretty much his whole career not doing that.
And he had a career out of making moon balls a thing.
Mm-hmm. And being able to move around at an elite level.
Can
Dylan I don't think Gabriel can do that.
Can Dylan Gabriel hit an NFL deep ball?
I'll also say, too, and I mentioned on the Vikings defense, in terms of blitz percentages, they're fourth in the league at 35%. They have 17 hurries, 11 quarterback knockdowns. They have 39 pressures and 11 sacks.
Oh, boy.
That is through 4 weeks. Look, good for him. He's getting his first start.
It's not going to be pretty.
If it is at all pretty.
Good for him.
I will walk away very impressed.
Yeah.
If he is able to get through this and make it a close game with the Vikings and look competent, I will be very impressed and very happy for him. Because right now I look at that Vikings defense and I'm like, Brian Flores is licking his chops going, cool, we're going to have a real nice PR game here.
The only thing that Dylan Gabriel might get away with is a win. The Browns defense is scary. Carson Wentz was bad last week. And we might see 13-10.
Right. Hope your defense gets some turnovers or just doesn't let them score and go from there. We'll see. That game is going to be one of your early games, European, 9:30, 9 o'clock start time. We'll see.
Right.
I don't love the European schedule, and I know we're heading towards a lot more of it.
Roger's saying, like, all 16 teams will play a game in Europe every year. And it's like, dude. Or internationally, it's like, dude.
And they're not even having like a ton of fun with it. Like there's going to be a game, what, in Australia next year?
Right.
It's not even going to be a 1 o'clock game, 1 a.m. game, I mean, when I say that. They're going to make it a night game in Australia, so it'll be like 1 or 2 o'clock here or whatever the time difference is. I'd love for it to be like the Australian Grand Prix in Formula One. No, you sickos, you're on at 12:30. Let's go.
Working that would be a nightmare.
I don't think the Bills will get it. Although it is the Rams, and they do play the NFC West next year. So they may. Probably
I'll
not.
I'll slap the taste out your mouth.
They probably will not get it. 803-0550, the number to call. Sabres Live coming up at the top of the hour. Sabres pregame at 6 right here on WGR for a 7 p.m. puck drop. Sabres hosting the Pittsburgh Penguins. Just two more games left in their preseason. You're listening to WGR.
All right, here we go. Another Wednesday leading up to another Sunday night game. Another night game coming up this weekend in Buffalo. But listen, if you're thinking right now about all the different things that are going on in your life and you think that maybe you can't get to your bathroom remodel, think again, because you can. Because with Bathfitter, they're going to make sure it's no hassle and it's quick and it's efficient and you're going to be treated totally professionally like me, Sal Capaccio, and my entire family, my mom and my stepdad. Bathfitter turned their old tub into a beautiful walk-in shower. Totally customized with a seat, shelves, a safety bar, everything they needed. The honest approach, the professionalism was top-notch. We couldn't ask for more. I know you're busy. Again, don't worry about your bathroom being torn up for days. That's not going to happen. Bathfitter, transform your space in just one day. No mess, no hassle. Every tub or shower is custom-made to fit your space. And it's going to fit perfectly. Nothing starts until they've seen your bathroom. No high-pressure sales, no gimmicks, just honest service and a lifetime guarantee. Make sure you call them right now. 716-324-5850. 716-324-5850.
Sabres get it ahead. Here's Costa Hellenius with Mertka. Takes the pass. Scores! Hellenius to Mertka. 2-0 Buffalo with 7:43 to go here in the first.
Dan Dunleavy there on the call. Sabres preseason getting close to wrapping up. They're 3-1 in the preseason so far. Means absolutely nothing, but it's nice to see on your sports app that they're 3-1.
I will say it's nicer. It's good that you picked the Mertka highlight because Radim Mertka has been playing very well through his first preseason in the NHL. To a point where he might challenge for a roster spot, possibly looking at his 9 games before going to junior, or be sent to the AHL as a whole. There's an interesting little fascination with him because of the fact that he was on loan from, I do believe, Czechia. And therefore, because he was on loan to junior, he can play in either the AHL or in junior hockey this year. However the Sabres want to see fit for him.
Yeah, I heard Paul talking about that with Bulldog yesterday because that's kind of the unknown is actually can Mertka go to the AHL? Is it even a good decision? Turns out he can go. Now it's kind of going to find out where they actually want to send him.
But now he's been playing very calm, cool, collected for an 18-year-old. Impressively so throughout the preseason, including that night against Detroit where it's 5-2, the goal horn's blaring, Rob Ray's hating everything about it with his eardrums. Mertka is the lone Sabre defenseman that does not end up on the ice for a goal against. Very calm, very cool, collected. I'm very interested to see what they do with him. They waived Zach Jones. Sorry, Zach.
It's tough. Not
Brian better. Johnson also in the lineup here tonight. So I think it's between Johnson and Mertka right now. And we'll see what happens there. But speaking of that, Sabres Live coming up next, as we'll hear plenty more about the Sabres as they take on Pittsburgh tonight at KeyBank Center.
Hey, it's Jeremy White
and Joe DiBiase.
Did you know that Jeremy and Joe is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, every highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods, and whenever it works for you.